Welcome back. It is The Drive with Jack, the Spotlight Radio Network. Jack Ebling here with my producer, Boston Rob. Rob, let's go right back out to our guest line. Very happy to welcome in Darian Harris. Besides all of his work at Michigan State as Director of Player Relations and Program Enhancement, the five-year MSU linebacker and co-captain of the 2015 college football playoff team, is probably as big an NBA follower as there is in this area, besides all of his duties as a dedicated dad. Darian, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Well, I guess I'm better than the Denver Nuggets this afternoon. What did you make of that, and how did that happen? I don't know anyone who thought that Miami was going to jump out to an 11-point lead, go down by 15, come back, and go up 12 again, and then hold off a furious charge by Denver.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I mean, I know that the age-old saying in basketball is that it's a game of runs, especially in the NBA, and depending on which team you're rooting for, you don't want to believe it in the real time based on who is up. But it truly is. I mean, momentum is a real thing, and I'm sure there's been studies out there on momentum and how it can kind of carry a team. But that's all we saw throughout that game was incredible momentum swings. And by the time we hit the fourth quarter, the Heat just had the momentum. You saw the Nuggets unravel just a little bit. You know, was it three straight fouls by Joker? And there was at that point in time where I figured the Heat were kind of going to take this one because everybody on the Nuggets side just looked a little frazzled, which was not what we were normally, you know, used to seeing this entire playoffs. They hadn't dropped a home playoff game, but the Heat's resiliency showed through. And I think after game one, we probably thought it was going to be a sweep, if not, a gentleman's sweep maybe at best, but maybe now we have a series.
Darian, it's never just one team or one player, one play that makes a difference in a 48-minute game. But if you had to choose one, was this a game that the Heat won or a game that the Nuggets lost?
I think it was a game that Heat won. I mean, I truly, when I look at the, Gabe Vincent stepping up and obviously Duncan Robinson was kind of the star of the show for the Heat. Mm-hmm. You got to give it up to them and say they won it. Jimmy was resilient down the stretch. Bam played a great fourth quarter. So especially with the Nuggets resolve this entire postseason, I don't want to discredit it. They won away. I truly believe it was a game that the Heat won.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, I knew that Darian would say that. He loves to give credit where credit is due. A lot of people in sports media immediately start to look for, okay, who can we blame for this? But I will say that Denver helped a lot. You talk about those fouls by Jokic. I thought Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, for such an experienced player and an NBA champion, had two of the dumbest fouls, which just handed Miami 5 points at the line. And then there were a couple of calls, and I understand how difficult it is to officiate an NBA game, but missing that out of bounds when Jimmy Butler's foot was clearly out of bounds and he threw the ball to Vincent for the three. And then everybody was watching the shot that Jamal Murray took that was goaltended. I don't think there was any doubt that was not on the upward trajectory. It seemed like it was been coming down for about almost a foot. Took all of that. And even then, came down to a final possession. And you can argue about this. Tom Izzo is a firm believer to a point where it's, you can predict it, that in a situation like the Nuggets were in at the end of the game, there's going to be a timeout if you have one. And other people believe that what that does is give the defense a better chance to adjust, to set up. Boston called its timeout against Miami, and we know what happened with Derek White in game six. But Michael Malone, who I think is a really excellent coach, decided that the ball was in Murray's hands. He had a head of steam. He had an open floor. and he was just going to let it go. Were you surprised by that?
I wasn't surprised. You know, I tend to go back and forth both ways with that one. But I thought in this case, I liked the notion of not calling a timeout, just strictly because you have Jamal Murray and his ability to create off the dribble and, make a play in that standpoint. And got a great shot off, you know, as somebody that you would trust without calling up a play. Just because of the time on the clock. I mean, 11, 12 seconds left. Like, you can draw up a play, but the play is going to, you know, it's going to take a while to formulate because you want to take the last shot.
Right.
So I can understand if it's below 5 seconds where you're going to, you know, off the inbound pass, the shot's probably going up. Outside of that, I like the idea of not taking a timeout. He just missed a shot.
Darian, Nikola Jokic did not have his best game. And not very often you'll see Joker have more turnovers than assists. He had 5 turnovers and only 4 assists. 4 assists for a center normally is not bad at all. But in his case, we're so used to these triple-doubles. Now with 9 of them in this playoff alone. So more than half the time he's getting a triple-double. And last night he had more than 40 points for the 8th time this season. And 4 of those 8, Denver's lost.
Right.
He scored 43 and they lost. He scored 53 against Phoenix and the Nuggets lost. And last night, 41. So he was scoring. He has an amazing touch. He has more baskets that hit the rim and fall in. I wish I could shoot a basketball that softly.
Yeah, I was listening to some clips from Draymond's podcast. He had Steve Kerr on, and Coach Kerr touched on exactly that. You know, you can let Joker have 41, 50 points, but only 4 assists and 5 turnovers. You neutralize really what is his best asset, which is passing and facilitating as a point center, which maybe to the likes that we've never seen before. So
yeah,
if you cut off that ability for the others to get going, obviously Jamal Murray, but the Michael Porter Juniors and Bruce Browns and the KCPs and Aaron Gordons of the world, and just let Joker be Joker. It's kind of similar to what Coach Izzo was looking to do against Purdue and Zach Edey. Just let him have 30, 35 and try to neutralize the others. And if you're able to do it, it's usually a really good strategy, and that's what the Heat were able to do last night.
There's something else, Darian, I think that needs to be talked about. I always talk about the importance of luck in a game. And we had seen in Game 1 of the Finals, Caleb Martin, who had been so good against the Celtics, I thought he was maybe the most valuable player in that series. It turned out he was one vote behind Jimmy Butler, but wasn't feeling well and really couldn't play. So Eric Spoelstra is forced into a change. Kevin Love comes in and makes a big difference, not in scoring, but in terms of the way that they can defend, in terms of some of the screening, some of the other things that worked. And I think that was maybe not a surprise to Denver, but it was an adjustment that they weren't prepared to make.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that happens often. You know, you get a report prior to a game with either, you know, folks not feeling well or that may be out, and then either they're able to play, they play better than expected, or adjustments are made by the team that, didn't expect to have certain guys. So that can always throw you off. You see a game where, Caleb Martin hasn't had, really impactful finals games so far, but he did hit a late clutch three that was big. But then Duncan Robinson is now coming of age and actually driving the ball to the basket and facilitating. And Kyle Lowry is a champion. I think we often forget about him and his moxie amongst the others on the Heat team. So, you know, the Heat are there for a reason. I do think the Nuggets overall are a much better team, but doesn't mean that this is going to be a walk in the park.
I know what a big Lakers fan you are, none bigger in the state of Michigan, and Rob Bennett, a diehard Celtics fan. But I have to tell you, I love this finals matchup because Denver's never been to the finals before. Miami seems to do it in a most unusual way. You have a two-time MVP who was the number 41 pick in the draft for Denver. And with Miami, you have seven players on the active roster who were undrafted. It just shows there are lots of different ways to get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, I think that it's really, really overblown by, you know, whether it's media or just folks in general that say that, you know, smaller market teams mean less coverage or less viewership when it comes to championships. And I just don't subscribe to that. You know, the finals numbers are doing great. Like you said, you get a team that's there for the first time. They have the best player in the world. They're fun to watch. And then you have a Heat team that's an incredible, I guess you could call it an underdog story, with an incredible, likable superstar, Jimmy Butler. And it's just really good basketball. So people are going to watch. And I agree. I love the series. It's been interesting, you know, so far because of the Game 2 result. And now I think you might get the viewership up even more for the remainder of the games, however long the series goes.
So what should we expect, Darian? Now they go back to Miami for games 3 and 4. The Heat have captured home court advantage, whatever that means. We saw in the series against the Celtics, maybe there was a road court advantage. But in terms of what we're going to expect Wednesday night in game 3, what is that?
I would expect the Nuggets to win, but I think that they'll split these games, these next two in Miami. And, you know, I think it will be a 2-2 situation. And then, I mean, Nuggets may win in 6, but I do think it'll be 2-2 after the next two in Miami.
If I told you that this series was going to be 3-1 after 4 games, would you think the Nuggets would win 2 in Miami or that the Heat would hold the home court advantage?
I would say that the Heat would probably hold home court.
Okay. All right. Were you one of the people who said it would be a 5-game series a couple hours ago, a day ago?
Definitely before last night I was thinking 5 at best.
Yeah, yeah. Well, congratulations to Miami for that job last night, and we know what Eric Spoelstra is capable of doing. If you were to rank the top 3 coaches in the NBA, would he be on that list, or would he be atop that list?
I think Spo is atop it. I mean, I you know, based on what we've seen over the longevity of the time and for who he's had, I mean, obviously when you have a LeBron James and D-Wade and Bosh, but, you know, he's been in the finals, obviously recently he's been in the playoffs, he's been a number one seed. Well, you know, when you start looking around, again, especially as you see, you know, the Nick Nurses and Budenholzers and Doc Rivers and Monty Williams and the folks getting let go, you got to look at Spo is probably the best coach in the league.
All right. We're talking with Darian Harris about NBA basketball and want to talk to him a little bit about Michigan State football, of course. Big weekend, but before we go there, I want to talk about an award that Michigan State just received and the NIL education program. People don't think of NIL education, Darian. They think of NIL as payments and money and cars and the actual benefits that are received by athletes. But at Michigan State, it's much, much more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, down in Atlanta at the NIL Summit, which is a national event hosted by Influencer, where every single school is pretty much represented, and some of the biggest names from a student athlete standpoint, as well as a sports, you know, media and just influencer standpoint, descend upon Atlanta to the College Football Hall of Fame for a two-day event. And Michigan State Athletics, our Evergreen program, was awarded with the top institutional NIL program. And it is all-encompassing. That award is definitely about education, but it's also about, and it says very clearly in the description, it's about NIL opportunities and then outside-of-the-box thinking. So, for example, our on-campus NIL summit, as well as our NIL celebration, and also the managing and handling of, you know, different opportunities, whether it's from a group licensing standpoint, collective standpoint, or just all around, different brand opportunities on an individual basis. So definitely gives us, a lot of credibility in the space. And as I continue to harp on, NIL is not a problem here at Michigan State. We've always been a leader in the space. We continue to lead in the space. The education that we provide to student athletes is crucial, but we also have some tremendous opportunities for our athletes as well. And they've continued to do a great job with it. And it's one of those things where when you whether it's losing players to the portal or you see a certain deal that all of a sudden is no more, people automatically point to the institution and the powers that be in the institution and say that they're the problem. That's not always the case. And so I think that bringing that hardware home definitely solidifies that we're leaders in the NIL space and will continue to be.
We mentioned that last night on Press Pass, and we had Rico and Tom, and Rico Beard said that Michigan State had to get with the program that it's behind in terms of NIL and had to maybe pay more or something else to get top prospects. That's not the attitude that you have or that Michigan State is taking, right?
No, I believe that we're competitive, and then people hear the word competitive, and they say, well, that's just another way of saying that, we're kind of middle of the pack. And I don't believe it. I believe we're competitive just like everybody else. I mean, again, you start looking around the country and you look at where different players that are top players at top programs end up going or transferring to or things of that nature, it happens. And it's not just football, but basketball, women's basketball. I would say that the biggest story in transfer portal free agency news came out of women's basketball. And obviously, certain student athletes were doing extremely well at their original institution, but they felt that they could seek out a better opportunity elsewhere. So, I don't believe that we're behind at all. I do believe that there's some other things that we're looking to do, and we are moving in that direction, but that doesn't mean we're behind. It just means like anything, if you're looking at last year's champions, whether it's Kansas City Chiefs or, across the college landscape or across the NBA with even the Golden State Warriors, after you win a championship, you're still looking at ways to get better. And we approach things the same way. We're looking at ways to get better in the NIL space, and we definitely will improve in the NIL space because there's ways to improve, not because we're behind by any means.
Darren, you say things you're looking to do. I don't expect you to reveal Michigan State's strategy, but can you give us a little clearer idea on what that might be or what area that is? Is that more education? Is that more the kind of across-the-board thing that kind of set Michigan State apart? Is it building relationships for elite players?
So there's, we're looking at different opportunities from the standpoint of alumni. Our fans, supporters getting involved in different ways. I know there's been some programs out there from MSU standpoint that may have fell by the wayside or didn't necessarily work. So just continuing to build on those different opportunities from a corporate sponsorship standpoint for people to get involved. And then just other opportunities that are unique to our student athletes. There's a lot of ways, especially going forward with the way that the conference is shifting and restructuring, that there will be more opportunities for our student athletes to get into, to be able to exercise their NIL in a lot of different ways. So I'm excited about the direction we're going. I'm excited about the direction of our program and just incredibly proud of our entire department, NIL committee, and all the student athletes, coaches, and faculty members we have that have not just in athletics but across campus that have bought into NIL, supported, and helped us bring that award home.
Two more questions about name, image, and likeness, and I want to touch on the recruiting weekend. How many players would you guess are in a different classification. We hear all the stories, but that's not the average player, certainly not every player. Is it 5%, 2%, 10% who are in the stratosphere? And then there are players who are maybe getting a deal here or there on a much smaller scale, and some who are just getting what Matt Ishbia was able to provide as a monthly stipend.
I mean, I would say it's closer to the, you know, 2% that are in the stratosphere range, as you would call it. And then I would say, you know, probably after that, it's another, 20 to 30% that are out there securing multiple deals, you know, through social media, through using right. the exchange, through using other marketplaces, and just accumulating deals in that way. And then, you know, maybe another 20 to 30% that are, really benefiting from group license opportunities. So jersey sales and things of that nature, right. where they're going out there and they're making plays, they're well-known in that regard, and then people are going out there and purchasing merchandise with their name on it. And then the remainder are, just, you know, whether it's team-wide deals or things of that nature are benefiting from that. So it's definitely a pretty wide range. But I would say, you know, overall we're in the 60%, 70% range just on football of student-athletes that have at least done one deal outside of a team-wide deal, like the UWM or with Matt Ishbia, which is a high number, which, again, showcases that there are opportunities out there and a lot that our student-athletes are doing and a lot more that they'll be doing in the near future.
So if someone listening to this show, a Spartan fan, wants to help, wants to connect with the collective, wants to contribute in some way to Michigan State athletic success, how do they do that?
Yeah, so that's the part that we're working through. So trying to get to a point where the general public will say can contribute to NIL. There's a few programs that have shifted to that model, and we're moving in that direction. And I don't expect us to not get there. It's just not something that happens overnight. Right. So I fully expect us to, at some point, get there. We have a vehicle. We have a vessel that's ready to undertake that. I'm just going to be about, you know, dotting some I's, crossing some T's, and we're really looking forward to it. So when we get to that point as a department.
All right. Very quickly, Darian, big weekend. The first of, five, I guess, you have this month or four. You have five or four weekends?
Four.
Okay, yeah, because you don't have the one that goes into July.
Correct.
So in terms of what happened, how many players did you have, and how would you gauge the response?
Yeah, I would say we had a really strong turnout. We had a lot of families here that were excited to be here, you know, first weekend in June. So getting that first visit, be it being first on the docket, is important. We've discussed before, I mean, you can say there's pros and cons to every single weekend based on, you know, when you're bringing families in. But all in all, thought it went extremely well. You know, Mark DeThorne came in, you know, and as I kind of joked about, he's been here for a minute and a half. So to hit the ground running, you know, in stride as he's putting his staff together, thought he did a great job with the event, with the weekend. And, you know, I think our main focus was just getting back to the roots of Michigan State, what makes Michigan State special, and understanding that that will definitely speak to families, as well as the added, you know, additions to recruiting when it comes to NIL and branding and all those other things, which we, of course, touch on. So all in all, I really did think it was a smooth weekend that went very well. You know, we'll do debrief this week as a staff, what went well, what needs improvement, and we're already looking forward to next weekend.
Players from coast to coast, right? California to Massachusetts.
Yeah. We had players from all over the country, which is great, you know, on a national recruiting standpoint. And just getting them to understand where the state of Michigan is, you know. It's general geography. You know, it's not, an indictment on the state. But where you're from, you know where that is. And outside of that, sometimes you don't know where everything is. So just making sure people understand we're at a central part of the country. You can get anywhere, anytime from the state of Michigan relatively easily. And we're not up north in Canada, all the way up there. But we're also, you know, in a good place. And I think that was one of those funny things that we realized we actually do need to touch on, you know, because by joke, though, we were at the northern part of the United States when he got here, which I was like, we're not actually that far from Oklahoma, buddy. And then he figured that out and thought that was pretty funny. So, again, getting back to the roots of what makes this state and this school special.
Darian, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Have a very successful June, and we'll get you back on Press Pass a little bit later this month.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Darian Harris. We'll be right back with Pat Caputo of 97.1 The Ticket coming up next.